This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora, o te whanau. That was a bit abrupt, wasn't it? Welcome to the AA Live radio show. This is the show that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. Thank you all for joining us around the motu and the world this evening. Now, tonight we have a special guest star with Mike and I, and that's Sam. Hi, Sam.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much, Sue. Mike, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Pleasure. Mm-hmm. Great to have you.
Fantastic. Is this have you been on radio before? Or?
Oh, this is definitely my first ever podcast ever. I think I may have been on the radio like years ago, you know, trying to ring up and win a competition or something. Probably like More FM or The Edge, you know, 20 plus years ago. So, yeah, this is definitely my
first. This is the go. Well, it's fabulous that you're here.
Thank you.
Yeah, so let's get started with the show. Alcoholics Anonymous is a service based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics. We do the work through a 12-step program where recovering alcoholics support each other who want to stop drinking and where to learn how to live life. We do the mahi together and work through the 12 steps. For me, working through the AA program as a daily practice and being invested in recovery is bringing about a new version of life, which today is pretty damn great, I have to say. In the rooms of AA, by sharing and listening, the main themes, if you like, is that each of us have finally recognised that we are no longer able to handle alcohol in any form and that we need to stay away from it completely. The most important thing is that we also realise that we don't try to deal with the problem single-handedly. We bring the problem out into the open with other alcoholics. People who come into the rooms with a range of thoughts and reasons about their life problems with alcohol and what AA is about. And each week I tend to list off a few, and some of these sound run along these lines. One of them is, if I come to AA, will my workplace and my colleagues find out? Or are there many women in AA, as I heard it's mostly about old guys. Sorry, guys.
We're not that old.
Not old. I should probably delete that. Mostly about men. And will I identify with any of them? I think I might get a few complaints about that one. The term alcoholic seems pretty intense. I think I'm more of a heavy drinker in the weekends. So maybe all I need to do right now is slow down or just match my drinking to my friends. Even though each one of us has different reasons, there is a one common bond, and that is we all have a problem with drinking. Whether that's by how much we drink in terms of volume and frequency, how our dependency on alcohol has become problematic, and how people close to us are concerned and impacted by our behaviours. That's a good little intro there.
Should we very quickly address some of those questions in case people are having those thoughts?
Okay.
If you come to AA, will your workplace and colleagues find out? Well, it's an anonymous program, so there's no reason why they would need to. What happens in the room stays in the rooms, and that's one of our, you know, most important traditions. So your recovery is your business, and yeah, that certainly no one in the rooms will out you to any of your workmates and colleagues. And there's lots of women, aren't there?
There's quite a few women that have problems with alcohol, and me being one of them. But yeah, sometimes it's, 50-50, 60-50. There's no real sort of ratio, but women definitely feel comfortable in the rooms, which has sometimes, I think, occasionally been an issue in the past. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's some young guys too, aren't there, Sam? We're very young men.
Yeah, definitely.
Young bracing men.
Young middle-aged men. Anyway, we'll moving along.
And as we start through, Mike or Sam, would one of you like to do the preamble?
I can do the preamble.
There you go.
Let's go. The AA preamble. We start each meeting by reading out the AA preamble, which gives you a good idea of how we work. The AA preamble reads as this. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Yeah, and just to let you guys know, what you hear tonight are the opinions of those in tonight's show. That's the three of us, or us individually, and not the opinions of alcoholics as a whole. We have guests who are invited to share their story and experience. However, as a whole, it's just us as recovering alcoholics talking about different aspects of our recovery. And would you like me to rip into today's daily reflection?
I'd love to. Yeah, I'm giving the raised eyebrow look, but I should be just
No, good.
Yeah. Let's go.
So the Daily Reflections, so we have a piece of literature, the Daily Reflections book, which is a collection of short readings, one for every day of the year. And today's reading, June the 24th, a spiritual kindergarten. We are only operating a spiritual kindergarten in which people are enabled to get over drinking and find the grace to go on living to better effect. And that's from As Bill Sees It, and Bill was one of our founders, page 95. When I came to AA, I was run down by the bottle and wanted to lose the obsession to drink, but I didn't really know how to do that. I decided to stick around long enough to find out from the ones who went before me. All of a sudden, I was thinking about God. I was told to get a higher power, and I had no idea what one looked like. I found out there are many higher powers. I was told to find God, as I understand him, that there was no doctrine of the Godhead in AA. I found what worked for me and then asked that power to restore me to sanity. The obsession to drink was removed, one day at a time. My life went on and I learned how to live sober.
Thanks for that, Mike.
Awesome.
Pretty powerful there. Spiritual kindergarten, yeah. Junior school.
I like that. I feel very much like I'm at at the spiritual level of someone at a kindergarten.
You've got the bright coloured blocks that you're putting together.
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's today's reading covered off a lot, I feel. This program is a program of spirituality. My first sponsor told me that, and you know, that's pretty highlighted there about finding a higher power as we understand them. Mm. And
was that terrifying for you when you first arrived?
Yeah, it was.
You know, like, it's like, you know, what do I do about that?
Yeah, for someone.
Will that mean I will not get through it?
Yeah. You know? For sure. When I first got sober, I didn't have any kind of relationship with a higher power whatsoever. I'd grown up in a Christian home and attended church in my formative schooling years. But once I started to drink, that all kind of went out the window, and I really distanced myself from the idea of there being a God at all. So it was, yeah, to answer your question, it was very daunting, the idea of there being committing to something and then it having a foundation of there being a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity, as that reading says today.
Mm. I can relate to lots of that. I mean, I grew up in a Catholic family, and pushed back against that quite hard, and certainly was a bit, yeah, found the God word a bit repellent when I first came in. But I liked listening to lots of other people and hearing how other people understand it, and I quite like some of the God acronyms, like the G-O-D, things like Group of Drunks, Good Orderly Direction, Great Outdoors, Gift of Desperation, those things. And when I realised that those things, like a higher power, could be, and I think my higher power concept has grown quite a lot, but initially I was able to get into it just by thinking about a group of drunks, because it was something I could see in the room with me, and that was a starting point for me, and it's kind of grown from there to be something quite different. But that's kind of a nice easy in, I think, for some people.
That's right, identify with the group in front of you, that meeting itself, and just even taking that sort of energy or trying to listen to something when you first start, because you're just like there in the headlights going, what is going to happen? I need I think I need help. You know, life is pretty messy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says, doesn't it, here as well. I was run down by the bottle and wanted to lose the obsession to drink, but I didn't know how to do that. Man, like, I was run down all right. I was... The bottle had knocked me right to the rockiest of rock bottoms.
Right.
And, yeah, fortunately, I walked into a AA meeting and it stuck. I decided to stick around long enough to find out, you know, from
I think
other people.
For me, I might have shared this already on this show, but I was, like, completely agnostic and atheist. From a previous sort of semi-religious family. And I thought, I don't mind what it is. Like, just tell me what to do. Mm. I knew I didn't have to sort of go into more of a religious aspect.
Mm.
So I just had to work it, go on the fly, like just.
So that's real willing. That's willingness, though, eh? And that's one of our spiritual principles. That willingness and open-mindedness is kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. And I had a very good friend, or still do have a very good friend in AA in Auckland, and she'd been very patient with me for about 8 years, you know, taking me on walks with the dogs in Auckland. You know, how about, have you thought about doing this? And, you know, just talking it through, going to the odd meeting with her. But then, so I thought, well, she's got a good perspective on it. And I talked about it with her too. So that was really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found things like spirituality I wasn't sure how to understand, make sense of those either. Like, and I think one of the steps talks about a spiritual awakening. And maybe I imagined some kind of, you know, in Africa somewhere, taking ayahuasca, dancing around a campfire with people playing bongo drums or something like that. That was some kind of naive conception of a spiritual awakening that I had.
But like some transformative, like, moment.
Yeah, in this really sort of visceral way. But I think I've come to kind of understand spiritual concepts are things just like honesty, willingness, open-mindedness, trust, faith, you know, and they're all kind of things that aren't that strange and bizarre. And
they're really applied.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I found interesting. Yeah, hey, should we play a track and then we can come back and dig a little deeper with our lovely guest?
Sam, what have you got lined up for us first up?
The first song that I have got lined up for today is a song called Hold On by the Alabama Shakes, one of my favourites.
Awesome.
So thanks.
Off we go.
Bless my heart. gotta hold on.
Groovy. I don't think I know the Alabama Shakes. I'm not familiar with them. Can you tell us a wee bit about them?
I can, a little bit, yeah. Lead singer, her name's Brittany, and they are an American band. I've seen them a couple of times in concert overseas.
Yep.
But her voice is, gives me the shakes.
Mm.
No pun intended. Yeah, no, I cool. Come across them years and years ago, and yeah, that song I love, yeah, it's awesome.
Awesome. So I thought tonight we might spend some time talking with Sam, about your experience and how you understood your relationship to alcohol back in the day. Would you like to tell us a wee bit about your story, what you were like and how your life's changed and what things are like now?
Certainly, Mike. Yeah, so my relationship with alcohol back in the day. Well, my relationship with alcohol started possibly a little later than your average Kiwis. I think the first time I got drunk, I was probably end of first year uni, so 19 years old, which is probably a bit of a late bloomer.
It's a late bloomer.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I didn't really touch the stuff at all at high school. I had a fairly strict upbringing, didn't go to parties on the weekends and just didn't really have any sort of desire to...
Like you weren't associated with all of that in that way.
No, I was in, the non-cool party group at school. That wasn't my weekend vibe. Mm. And I just didn't really have any desire to get to seek it out or anything like that I really remember through my high schooling. So, yeah, definitely a late bloomer in terms of consumption, but I remember the first night that I did get drunk, I really did have that feeling of I have arrived that we hear about a lot in this program. And, just the alcohol gave me that extra bit of confidence, which made me feel like I was finally fitting in some ways or another. And, it was just all gas, no breaks after that.
Were you studying?
I was, yeah.
So that was maybe at that time kind of part of the culture as well?
Absolutely.
Were you here?
I was here, studying here in Dunedin at University of Otago. And second year I went into a flat and that's when my the alcohol consumption just was all gas, no breaks. Getting on it as regularly as possible, spending every last cent that you had on drinking and partying with, new friends and flatmates and all sorts. And that really didn't slow down much at all into my career in banking after graduating from uni.
And did you notice that in a way that when you're at university or studying or any kind of job and or certain age, everyone's with you and you're all quite similar in a way, your friends or you kind of identify with people or you probably have cliques or you socialise with people that are similar in a way.
For
but
sure.
Did you notice that it changed later on in the banking sector, or was that also rewarded or was that like expected?
It was definitely part of the bank, the culture there too. Heavy drinking, boozy lunches.
Yeah, wet lunches.
If regularly from sort of midweek, you'd be going out for beers after work. And it was, just a way to blow off steam and to, I don't know, have camaraderie with your colleagues. And, it was madness. So I worked in finance in Queenstown, and then I moved up to Auckland to pursue a job up there. And the drinking was just getting more and more heavy. The blackouts were happening far more regularly. Basically, on a weekly basis, I would get home and the next morning have very little memory of what I'd been up to the night before and what I'd done, and then people would fill me in, and it was just full of regret and shame and remorse. And what someone who is an alcoholic does is they manage to sort of put that away and push it down and bottle it up and go and repeat it the next weekend, no worries. So, you know, it was definitely a big part of my identity was smashing a lot of alcohol and regularly and being wild, absolutely wild and out of control and having very little control over what I was doing as a result. So, yeah, that was crazy. Moved myself over to Canada to go and do some snowboarding for a season, and funnily enough, the blackouts followed me there. And then after that, I moved over to the UK to do my sort of OE. And, yeah, I loved London because the party scene there is 7 days a week, and funnily enough, the blackouts followed me there too. So,
were you mixing things up by this stage as well?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, definitely.
There's you know, clubbing scene,
a lot of recreational
type of thing.
Drug use as well. And I was a daily cannabis user too. So, but alcohol was the one thing that I couldn't really not go without at all. Mm. Had no control over it at all. So a couple of years in London, living it up, but just killing myself slowly, and having many near misses and, you know.
I was going to ask, do you start sort of, not hurting yourself, but do you start getting in trouble?
Oh.
Out on these.
Terrible.
I guess they're binges or, you know, excessive nights.
Yeah, absolutely. Dodged, you know, I look back and, man, there was definitely some kind of higher power looking over my myself to mean that something a lot worse didn't happen in these states that I get myself in, 100%. But after 2 years of living in London and the visa expiring, I moved to Melbourne with my now wife. We got together in the UK. She's actually from Dunedin too, weirdly enough. And the blackouts followed me to Melbourne as well. And it was just the same cycle of, having alcohol in my system.
Been so dominant.
Yeah. And looking forward to it, like if sort of get to a Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm like, yes, you know, Friday's only a couple of sleeps away, or Thursday's only a night away, to that I'm going to send it, you know. In Melbourne 10 years ago, 2015, one night I'd been out with some friends on a Thursday night with some colleagues. I was working in finance in the financial hub of Melbourne on Collins Street in a bank. And I'd been out with some colleagues after work. And I took a $20 note with me. I actually met my wife at my office before going. She went home and she took my wallet. And I didn't have a card set up on my phone like you do these days. I literally took a $20 note and my bus pass to the pub with me because that was my way of trying to restrict my intake that night. You could get, two or three beers with $20 maybe. And but nothing could stop me getting myself to blackout town. So by about 8 o'clock that night, apparently I'd been kicked out of the bar that we'd been to for some, you know, quiet after work drinks with these people I worked with. And then from there, I have absolutely no idea of how I got home. When I did get back to my apartment and who I was sharing with my partner, my now wife, and another couple, our housemates. I was violent and, super angry, and I'd lost my possessions. And I woke up in the morning
So it must have been scary for the people that were there. Right?
Oh.
I mean, this is the, you're describing your, what we were say, just saying before, this rocky, rocky bottom.
This was
right?
up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Jekyll and the Hyde, like the scariest of monsters came out. Again, and this has been happening like most weekends, sort of on a pretty regular basis, but I woke up that morning and looked out my bedroom door and saw that the table was broken. And it just dawned on me, like, I have got absolutely no recollection of anything past like 5:30
night before. Past the $15 left in your pocket from buying a drink.
Yeah, and like, so I was still intoxicated, but I, you know, full of just the most worst regret and stuff. got myself into my suit and headed down towards the train station, and I was standing on the platform and I seriously contemplated jumping in front of the train as it came into the station, because that was my rock bottom that night before. Of
just no way out mentally.
No way out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was happening basically every week, and I could not remember anything, and I had no control, but this enough was enough, and I felt like I just wanted to die.
Mm.
I was like, what's the point of this? Like, what the hell? I can't even go to town with $20 and have any kind of respect the next day. So it was pretty bad, but fortunately that guardian angel that I spoke about before, you know, I guess held me back on the platform, and because people jumping in front of trains is pretty common in Melbourne. You hear about it quite a lot. And so I guess that's where that idea had come from. I don't know. But
you're still intoxicated and you're desperate. Like your mind's not really as pretty rattled.
Yeah. So I got to work, fortunately, and I was pulled up at my desk, and my colleagues are there who I'd been out with the night before, and they were fine. They weren't hungover. They were filling me in on the stuff they'd seen me do the night before, which was just another tidal wave of, you know, embarrassment smashing into me. And I sat at my desk and it dawned on me that I had, at like 9 a.m. on the Friday morning in my office, level 6 of some number on Collins Street, that I had a drinking problem. Like, it actually dawned on me right then. Never had it ever occurred to me before. After all of the years of diabolical alcohol consumption and madness, had
was it ever crossed my mind? Was it almost a period of denial? Because you,
I just thought I was a young man having a hell of a good time.
So you didn't have those discussions with your partner at the time? And, like, was she, like, putting up some...
I mean, she was putting up with
signs and stop signs and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so, but either I was deaf to listen and didn't want to hear it, but in that moment was the first time I ever honestly considered and realised that I had a drinking problem. So I Googled it. I Googled the word drinking problem because you've got to go to Dr. Google.
Yeah.
And fortunately, the number one search result was Alcoholics Anonymous website. And in my, as I said before, sort of state, I just clicked on it, and I was being honest with myself for once, because I realised I had a drinking problem, and then I went through the questions on that website. And it said if you answered yes to three or more, you might want to go to an AA meeting. And I'd answered yes to all 12 unanimously. and again, in that moment of rock bottom, of actually having a little bit of like clarity and
being scared, a bit honest, right? Being pretty terrified as well.
I clicked on the link which showed me where the next meeting was, and I went along the next night. And it was a spiritual experience. a spiritual awakening for sure. Yeah. Thank God.
So the step one was a no-brainer.
Oh, my goodness.
In this
walked
sense.
Into this room literally like a couple of hundred metres from my apartment in the South Yarra, so pretty nice part of inner city Melbourne. And there was a room of like 80 people on a Saturday evening. And I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe that there were just all these like normal looking people. Heaps of them, no doubt, congregating in a time when you'd normally be at the pub, no less, or doing something rather than like what I probably considered at the time some kind of like group therapy or church event. And this guy spoke up the front, and it was his 10th year of sobriety. And his story, I was just melting because everything he was saying, I was just like, oh my God, that's me. Mm. That's me. And I couldn't believe that he, and then he said he hadn't had a drink for 10 years, and it just was like blew me to pieces. I was like, what do you mean? I couldn't even fathom that idea. I had no idea of what on earth to expect going into my first ever AA meeting. Absolutely no idea. But God, I'm lucky I did, because it absolutely saved my life.
Yeah, it sounds like, thank goodness, you know, here you are today. What's that, 2025?
So yeah, into my 10th year. But, yeah.
And did you do, how did that go in the first year? Were you following the, you know, the recommendations? If you
yeah,
like, you know,
absolutely.
Nice
eh?
Simple,
I was desperate enough, I think. So that guy who was speaking in that meeting, the 10-year sober dude, he came up to me and spoke to me after the meeting because they asked you to identify if it was like your first meeting at the start, and you know, I'm up there quivering like a leaf standing up in front of all these people. And he spoke to me and he said, look, mate, whatever you do, don't pick up a drink. And go to a meeting every day for the next 90 days. And I just did that because I was so desperate. So I went to a meeting the next day. I think there was another one just down in the same building perhaps even. And then I went to another meeting the next day. And I did that every day for at least a month. And then it just became part of a non-negotiable for me, like this program saved my life, so the way I look at it is I owe it my life, so I'm going to keep going back because, as we spoke about before, it's about helping others. Mm. But that first year, like, yeah, but from going to meetings regularly, got a sponsor, really awesome dude who had done the steps and been sober for a while and similar kind of working job, sort of, we were quite similar people. And he took me through the steps. And, yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones. One day at a time, I still absolutely hold on to that little sentence that we use a lot. But, you know, it's stuck from day one, thankfully. And I haven't gone back out or anything like that so far, which is, you know, an absolute blessing. But
so you've remained sober from your first
meeting? Yeah.
That's cool, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool. And I think that's I can probably put that down to a couple of things. One, because, as I said, like that rock bottom was so bad. Mm. Like it was, this was just around the corner
when you're
for me.
You're talking into the microphone. Yeah. You're looking at me, and I, you know, when you have this, you were going back there in your mind.
Yeah.
You're almost that edge or that sort of that space. You know.
Yeah. Death was around the corner, very close around the corner. I have no doubt of that. And this, you know, coming into the AA program and doing the steps and having a sponsor, and that absolutely saved my life. And
you change the flow of your life in a way. Like, yeah. I guess you start meeting quite a few different people, right? Yeah. And then you, no doubt you went back to that meeting in Yarra and saw that chap again, whether it's the next day or 3 weeks later or something.
That's it, yep. And, those big, you know, Melbourne's a big city and there's a lot of meetings all the time. So I think I was sort of, I think I look back at a lot of the meetings I went to in my early days, and you hear a big old spectrum of sobriety and stories in those rooms and meetings for sure. Like, I was very lucky in that respect, eh? And that's not saying anything about this program in Dunedin, but it's just a numbers game, really. You know, it's a huge population, so there's a lot more meetings and there's a lot more people.
Mm.
So I think I heard, I heard early on what happens to people who relapse, and I've heard the stories, and they're all so similar. Like, it doesn't take very long at all for it to get back to being worse than it was, and extremely rapid. And that, I think, probably is part of the reason why I've managed to, hold on to sobriety for
a good solid
the start
10 years.
Yeah.
So will you be turning 10 this
year? I will,
Cool.
Yep. End of the year, end of November,
it's a big moment.
Man, I absolutely couldn't have imagined that happening ever, right, when you're living. But it's gone really quick as well. Like, it's... but it is cool. But it is absolutely. This program is one day at a time. Like, there's no other way.
And you're so much more conscious of how you're changing as a person, or aging, and your experiences. Things are way different, aren't they?
Oh yeah,
quite bizarre.
Yeah.
And have you ever, what those 10 years, has it sort of come in waves? Like, is there sort of, have you noticed different changes every couple of years, or?
Yeah, that's really,
I think,
good question.
I'm asking my question. I've got to you. I'm like, what's ahead of me? You know.
Okay, at the start of this year, I started sponsoring someone, and this for me has just been really, really awesome. So that's been a great, offshoot as part of this journey. Sponsorship and just having that, ability to really be connected with someone and take them through the steps is brilliant. But I just think in general, like, my life is beyond my wildest dreams. It sounds so cliche and you hear it probably all the time, but I've got like two little kids and live in a nice home, and like, I live in Dunners. It's so super chill here and awesome. Like, it's just freaking great. I'm so, so lucky. So that's how I guess I view my, I'm really grateful for where I'm at now. But yeah, this definitely hasn't been perfect. Like, man, there's been plenty of ups and downs along the way. But as long as I don't pick up a drink, and try to live the principles of this program.
That's right.
Take responsibility when you muck up, and make amends. And another thing that I'm really trying to practice more at the moment is acceptance. I've been doing this, as we've talked about, for 10 years now, but I'm scratching the surface on being more accepting of
the people in my life. You mean like radical acceptance? Because I was listening to something about that the other day, and I'm like, not in conflict, but I'm like, that's a position, isn't it?
My ego can
people
still
really believe in it.
Overinflate and, get put out by the stupidest of insignificant things. And, I can, take offense when I really don't need to act like that a lot of the time.
I think one of the cool things about the practice, the program, is that because I'm no doubt, you know, people out there that don't suffer from this disease have lots of these things as well, but we've got this kind of cool set of tools to work on stuff, like personal development-wise, like outside of stay sober first and foremost, but then it's like keep sticking around the rooms because you can kind of, you can improve your life in other ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We're going to skip into another song, I think. Sam, what have you got? What are you going to take us?
The second song I've chosen is by another one of my favourite bands called The Lumineers, and this song is called Ophelia, and I've chosen it because it's actually named our daughter, her middle name is named Ophelia after the song, so it's kind of a shout out to her.
Oh,
cool.
Yeah. Too cute. Here we go.
When I was young, I should have known better, and I can't feel no remorse, and you don't feel nothing bad. Since the flood.
Cool song. It's nice, a couple of songs I haven't actually heard before, so thanks for introducing me to some new music today.
You're welcome. Yeah, a couple of great bands there.
Very cool.
Do you play instruments yourself?
Oh my goodness, no way.
Oh.
No. Tried to do like the drums maybe in like fourth form when you're 14 to what that equates to these days. I'm not too sure. Year 10 nine or something. Yeah. No rhythm, but I do love music. Like I, still try and go to concerts.
Do you go to venues? Do you go out for gigs?
Yeah, not as much as I used to. With two young kids, it's a little bit more challenging. But I've been to a couple this year. My wife and I went up to Electric Ave in Christchurch earlier in the year, which was just a fantastic event. Man, they nailed it. We've even booked accommodation for next year already, even though the tickets aren't out yet. So that's something to look forward to. But, yeah, I think as well, like going to concerts and stuff was possibly part of my identity when I was before I got sober. Mm. It was, I guess, another, parties and loud music and that whole thing was definitely something that I got around a lot and made, you know, a lot of connections with people over and used
sure.
to, yeah.
Because I often with not so much, or maybe with younger people, come into sobriety or into recovery and they have that sort of idea of fear of missing out. Like they're in their early 20s and like it's quite a culture shock, like in terms of like there's that maybe future thinking of like my life is going to be quite dull. I'm not going to meet anyone my own age or my other friends sort of go out. So what am I going to do? Am I just going to be at home with myself? Or, you know, if I'm a single parent, does that mean I'm, this is it, you know, but I'm sober?
I used to go to these events and gigs and stuff and have no memory of them the next day. Like I'd gone and, oh, yeah, it was cool. I went, you know, man, look, I'm awesome. I'm cool. I went to this concert. And have absolutely no memory of what I've been to see. Like, what's the point in that? That is insanity. Whereas now I can go and enjoy it. And not, you know, and enjoy the art and the environment and the vibe and the experience and remember it all and the next day not be full of
regret
and shame. Toxins.
And worry and, you know, days of the body trying to flush out everything that had been ingested and...
That's
way better now.
Listen to this quite cool word called joymo. Have you heard of that? Like jomo.
No.
Instead of FOMO, it's joy of missing out.
Oh, I can relate to that. And it's like, in your 40s.
Yeah, in your 40s, right. Not sort of a bit later on. It's the joy of missing out, joy of not being under that pressure, maybe spending lots of money, feeling terrible, regrets, putting yourself in danger.
Yeah.
All of those things, you know, losing all of those, you know, all of those options.
Yeah.
So I quite like that. But, yeah, I can appreciate it, you know, when younger people are like, things are just so different. You know, do I play a lot of sport or what am I going to do? I'm not sporty. You know, like it's a little bit of adjustment.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You do have to, I think you have to find things to do to fill in the void it leaves, I guess. It's definitely not a bad void. Like, it's good to have that void now, but...
There's a space, though, right?
For sure. And for me, exercise was something that I really pursued heavily after I... when I first gave up drinking. That was something that, I was able to, I guess, fall in love with and pursue a lot of. And also... Yeah, because I wasn't either drunk or hungover, I was able to do it. And funnily enough, exercise is really good for your mental health too. So it was kind of like double benefit, I guess. so that was cool. But, there's all sorts of good things you can do instead of drinking. That's for blooming sure.
Did you find there was a time of, because I mean, I'm 9.5 months sober, just over 9.5 months, and I'm getting better at it, but I find... You know, just the like learning how to socialise. Did you feel like you had a period of like actually learning how you could go out and socialise over time? Did you hit that?
Yeah, I'm sure I did. I don't remember. I don't remember it too clearly, if I'm being honest. Yep. But I definitely do remember sort of feelings of extra anxiety before going out, and I guess in a way trying to either explain to people why I wasn't drinking anymore, or if I was meeting new people why I didn't, and because it had been such a big part of my identity, like it was a big shock for people that I wasn't sending it whenever I saw them and that kind of thing. So there was definitely an added anxiety, but I think the true friends, if you will, are the people who are with you.
Yeah,
and
happy
like,
for you.
That's great.
Yeah.
Like they, you know, probably they might have said anything, but, you know, they knew there was, that it was bad.
There's probably some relief from, you know, like the couple that you were living with. Like, that'll be nice if it doesn't come home and smash the table.
Dude, yeah, for sure. And like the amount of times that I'd bought like flowers and makeup gifts to, you know, apologise for my behaviour on nights previous. And we'd only been living with... Well, we actually lived with those guys in London as well. So I flatted with them there and then flatted in Melbourne. And, yeah, it was insanity. Like I was buying them apology gifts to make up for my dreadful things that I'd said.
Sounds a little bit cheaper than me getting booted out of my house and staying in a motel for a few nights until, you know, things have chilled out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, that's we might have to wrap up there a little bit. Sam, you've been incredible. It's been wonderful to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I've loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for your service.
Yeah, service, the big S word.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank
awesome.
You.
You are listening to the AA Live radio show in association with our friends at Otago Access Radio on FM 105.4. What else we got here? And I should continue. So I'm just turning the page, everyone that's listening. Alcoholics Anonymous is based on a 12-step program. For those who aren't sure about what this means, the 12 steps outline a path to spiritual progress through a series of actions that are designed to draw out what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous refers to as a psychic change, which is a complete mental, emotional, spiritual shift in perception. We believe in the 12 steps can be a critical element of a long-term recovery program. Thank you so much for spending time with us for this evening, reminding our listeners that if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we definitely can help. Here are two ways to contact Alcoholics Anonymous. You can call us on 0800 AA Works, or that translates into 0800 226 7757, or else there's the website, and that's aa.org.nz, which is really cool, actually. It's got lots of meetings. It's got the daily reflections. Mm. You can dial up like where you are in the country, where you are in the world, really.
Mm.
And it's got like the locations and the flips into maps and things like that.
It's a cool thing about the worldwide fellowship, hey? And you're going to finish this off with one last song.
One last song. And it is an absolute heater from the legendary New Zealand drum and bass outfit called Shapeshifter. And the song is called Dutchies.
Whoopsie, that's not it.
I don't think that's it. this song's called Dutchies. And I saw them at Electric Ave earlier in the year. I can't remember how many times I've seen
you're
these
You're flying
guys,
a big flag but, for that.
It was so
Electric
good.
Electric Ave, so good. You've mentioned it so many times.
Event.
AA is but, allied with no organisation.
Dutchies by Shapeshifter. Some classic New Zealand drum and bass. Let's go.
Thanks so much, Sam.
Thanks, Sam. And thanks, everyone. Take care of yourselves out there. Until next time, mate wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.